VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Welcome to the VanWee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3 The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Now here are your hosts of the VanWee Financial Hour, Stephen and Adam VanWee.
That sound you heard at the beginning of the song, that's cash registers across America ringing up Christmas sales. And they've been doing a pretty good job. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And we have in our studio with us
Marshall Gallup.
Those of you who are regular listeners probably remember that Marshall is a reverse mortgage specialist. He was on our show a couple weeks ago, and our comment was, that went so fast, we didn't even get the surface scratched very deeply on this thing. So I asked him if he'd be willing to come back again, and he graciously offered over Thanksgiving weekend. I said, no, I'm not going to take your holiday weekend. But next week would be fine, and here it is next week already. So Marshall's going to join us today, and we will be talking about reverse mortgages. But, as always, if you give us a call at 904-222-TALK, we'll talk about what you want to talk about. If you want to control the editorial comment, you know that we are always live. And the first rule of VanWee Financial is that when there's a caller, the caller gets preference. Good morning, Camille.
Hey, good morning. I was so happy to hear that you're going to do reverse mortgage today because I have a bunch of questions.
Well, good. You're in the right place.
All right. First of all, do we have to be the ones that are living in the home? Could it be our kids?
I'm deferring to the expert.
No, the reverse mortgage is made to the of-age borrowers for as long as either of them lives in the home.
So it wouldn't be all right for us to move and let the kids live in the house?
No. The loan would come due, and then there's a process once the loan comes due to sell the house or pay off the loan.
Okay. Well, I'm not really planning on that, but, you know, it was just something that we thought of. Also, another question I have is, what if one of us goes into a nursing home and the other person can't afford to stay in the house anymore? What are the choices?
As long as one of the borrowers is residing in the home, paying the taxes and insurance on the home, you can put the house on the market to try to get a sale for enough to pay off the mortgage. But once that person moves, then there is a clear timeline required, a maximum of a year to get the house sold or to get the loan paid off.
Okay, but that doesn't apply if they're in the home.
Correct. So believe me, I've had some clients where, yes, one person was living in the nursing home. The other person is in the home with the reverse mortgage. And there's a lot of important treatments of the proceeds of the reverse in that scenario.
Okay. All right. So that's a conversation we would probably have to get into with you. But the other question I have is there some way we participate if the value of the house goes up, or what if it goes down?
You participate 100% in the upside.
Okay.
Okay.
That's almost all of it.
How does that work, Marshall?
So what happens is this. You know, the reverse mortgage, if you have a flexible option on paying your payments or not, most people don't make the payments. So it's being added to your loan balance. As that balance grows, we're compressing your equity. But let's say you're in a market where the house has appreciated dramatically. Well, that appreciation continues. So if you turn around and sell the home that is appreciated much faster than the loan has had a growing balance. You get whatever the net proceeds are when you sell the house. FHA does not ask for any penalty, nor does the lender. You pay off what is the balance owed at the time you're paying it off, and that's it. So I guess the best way to look at it is you're protected on the downside because if there was no equity, FHA is picking up the check. They're taking the responsibility. However, if you have equity and you sell the house, you get whatever that equity is.
Okay. Well, that seems fair.
It does. A question from my standpoint here, thinking about that, what if the value went down and you did decide that your children wanted it, but they don't want to pay what you paid because the market value's down? What do they have to pay to get it? And do they have first refusal?
Excellent. Third point that many people in my industry even miss. Let's say, for instance, you owe $200,000 and the house is now only worth
$100,000.
Mm-hmm. An heir of yours could purchase the home for $95,000.
95% of market.
All of the payoff over that $95,000, FHA would absorb.
Really?
So your child, your heir would come in and pay $95,000 for that house.
We should have thought of that in 08.
There were some people that did take advantage of that.
I bet they were. Keep the house in the family for a fraction of what it was worth, pay off the reverse using Uncle Sam's money. I like it.
Ms. Camille, the reason why I enjoy working with financial planners around this.
Yeah, it's a good thing that you like doing it because I think it's pretty darn complicated, and you do a pretty good job of explaining it. If that could just stick with me, you know?
Well, but working around a planner, you really have a chance to look at your whole financial circumstance.
Sure.
And say, what is the most successful way for me to get from point A to point Z?
Mm-hmm.
And how can I mute the risks that I might have over that time? The reverse mortgage is just one tool that you can use in evaluating that and then setting up your plan.
Okay, sounds good.
Cool.
I really appreciate you giving us this information. It's a nice service.
And we are going to be talking, as the show goes on, about the reverse mortgage to purchase, which is a whole separate function. We're going to be talking about how to get a line of credit on the growing value of your home and lots of other things. So stay tuned.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Marshall, I think we'll come in after the break and we'll do our normal routine for us. Why don't you take this opportunity to read your disclaimer, because we've got to get it into the program, folks.
Excellent.
You all understand what it means to be in a regulated industry.
Marshall Gallup, NMLS number 450841, 312 Wingstone Drive, Ponte Vedra, Florida, 32081, 904-662-2634, Georgia Lender Licensee 36793, Georgia Originator License 48049. This originator is authorized to originate in Georgia and Florida. Thank you.
Adam, have we linked to Marshall on the website?
Yes, there's a link.
Okay, so if you go to VanWeFinancial.com, aside from getting this program when it goes into the podcast, you can also go directly from there to get a hold of Marshall. He's close by, and he's willing to, I've seen him go places to meet with you. He's very good about that. So if you have any questions, get them in today to the show while we're on. And then don't hesitate to get hold of Marshall afterwards. So when we come back, we'll do the trivia question. I've got a couple little comments to make. We're going to have Adam do a market wrap because we had another interesting week. Lots of things are going on. And then we'll get into the nitty-gritty of the reverse mortgage. And we're going to start with the most fundamental question of all. What the heck is it? I think there's a lot out there, a lot of people out there, just like I used to be a few years ago when I said, reverse mortgage? Is that an oxymoron? And trust me, it's not. It's a wonderful thing. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And Marshall Gallup.
And we are going to get into our market wrap for a little bit before we really hit the topic of the reverse mortgage hard. But I wanted to remind everybody that if you are new to our program, the rules, which we have just proven, are callers always go to the head of the line. If you want to talk about anything in the world you want to talk about, all you got to do is pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255 or 222-TALK. The regular listeners out there who make this program possible, thank you for listening. And tell your friends if you like the show and all those small businesses around town that we heard from last week. If you're playing the show while you're open on a Saturday morning and people are tuning in a little bit and you want a little free shout out, all you got to do is pick up the phone, tell us that you're listening to the show, and we'll give you a big howdy-do. All right. This week in the market, I would call it interesting, sort of.
Yeah. On the surface, it didn't look like a lot happened.
Didn't but feel exciting, but it was interesting.
There was actually a lot going on kind of underneath the surface. The Dow posted a slight gain, and the S&P dropped about 1%. The tech-heavy NASDAQ, though, dropped 2.7%, and that was kind of the most telling stat of the week because technology was by far the weakest sector. Well, energy posted the biggest gains for the week. Healthcare and consumer discretionary also pulled back, while financials posted another week of gains. That makes four in a row, I believe.
Yeah, he's rubbing it in.
A little bit. The Dow is weighted heavily towards financials, which is the reason it was positive, while the others dropped. In the S&P, technology makes up the largest sector, while financials are second, followed by healthcare and consumer discretionary. So you can see that three of those four were down, and that's why it dropped. And also, the Dow is only made up of 30 stocks, while the S&P 500 has 500. So that's going to play into it as well.
What's leading the Dow? I didn't look into that this morning.
Something's, I didn't check it, but yeah. I know it was financials. I did not see which ones posted the largest gains.
Yeah. Very rare when you see the Dow go one direction and the NASDAQ another direction. They're usually correlated by maybe a factor of 10 to 1 the same direction. But this week, I looked several times this week, and we had green number and red number going on.
Yeah, it was actually the norm this week, I think.
Yeah, I think it was. Very strange.
So the big news this week was in energy, or more specifically in oil. OPEC agreed to its first cut in oil production since 2008, and the market loved that news.
This market in particular.
The price per barrel is still around the $50 range, which isn't a new all-time, or not all-time, not even a new recent high. So there still could be some moves higher if OPEC actually follows through, which I think there's some doubt about that. Energy-producing stocks and oil field service companies like Halliburton all fared pretty well this week on that news. The economic data this week was generally strong for the first time in a while, which is all but guaranteed that the Fed will raise rates a quarter point in mid-December. If you've listened to the show over the last couple of years, you will know that we've been pushing for rate hikes pretty much that whole time. In fact, we would like the Fed to do more sooner, but it's not going to happen.
Yeah, they'll be measured again.
Yeah, instead, we're going to see a series of quarter-point rate hikes over a long period of time, and the market's going to panic every time it happens, even though everyone already knows it's coming. So go figure.
Mm-hmm.
Last December, the rate hike contributed to what turned out to be a two-month period of volatility in the market. Fortunately, the market bounced back really quick, and by late spring, all the losses had been erased, and then it pushed higher. So we're hoping for a similar trend without quite the downside that we saw last year.
Proving that patience is a virtue.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all if mid-December turned out to be a little bit of a weak spot in the market, though.
I would also not be surprised if it pulled an election-style bump, where overnight it tanks, and the next day it says, eh. We expected it, and boom, back.
That's definitely a possibility.
I don't think you can second guess these things and make a penny on it. I think you've just got to ride it out.
Yeah, this week or next week will be very telling, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest headline this week was that the unemployment rate unexpectedly dropped from 4.9 to 4.6%. The numbers behind this move were actually fairly solid, with most groups in the labor market dropping to new post-recession lows in their unemployment rates. The rate of full-time job growth has expanded since 2009, while part-time work has actually remained flat, which kind of surprised me. You keep hearing anecdotal stories about how everyone's taking part-time jobs, but the fact is there are full-time jobs out there, and people are taking them.
There's only one thing about that surprises me.
What's that?
That they waited till after the election to put that number out
there. I know.
There.
That is so surprising.
Every piece of news I read this morning, doing our pre-show wrap-up, was contrary to my belief that they were pushing the good data forward and waiting until after the election for the bad data. And if this is how they're playing politics, they're nuts.
They failed pretty bad. Yeah.
And I might say, thank you very much.
I'm not complaining. I would have done it differently. Well, this is the lowest unemployment rate we have seen since late 2007. There was a period before that when the rate was even lower, so this is not a new all-time low. It does appear that jobs are available right now for those who wish to pursue them. The other good news is that goes hand in hand with that is that gains in or drops in the unemployment rate usually lead to increases in pay. So if you haven't got a raise in a while, just wait around. I think it might be coming.
Well, it's too bad that the Obamacare increases are coming through like they are, because the pay raise you get might well be
it's very possible
tied to your
but
benefits.
We'll see what happens with the new administration and what they do with that. Nobody really knows the answer to that right now.
No, they really don't. But another 466,000 people dropped out of the workforce in November. I did a little quick math. The population of this country raises about 3.6 million per year net increase. And the number of people who die run about 2.4 million. And we keep having these shifts down in the number of people working. And I add all those up and I say there's about 857,000 people who are just being lazy.
You would think the numbers would match because you have all these millennials entering the workforce and all the baby boomers dropping out. You would think it would be one for one, almost.
And I cannot rectify all those numbers. There's either an error in it or people actually are just not wanting to work.
I don't know. I don't think anyone knows. I haven't read a real good answer on that anywhere.
I haven't either. It's crazy in my humble opinion. Well, what do we look for this week?
This week, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see something similar to what happened this past week. I just don't see any real direction right now because the news is good, which is good for the economy, but stocks hate that because they know it's solidifying the imminent increase in the Fed hike in December. So I wouldn't be surprised to see something just like this week.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Nothing's going to happen until December 14th.
No, I agree.
It could bounce all over the place, but nobody knows for sure what the Fed will do, but they do know one thing. Whatever they do, it'll be wrong. And then the next day, it'll be right, or vice versa.
Yeah.
So, in other words, volatility abounds. Nothing new. Okay, trivia question brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm, 636-7888. First of my Christmas trivia. It is now December.
That is true.
Naval engineer Richard James invented a toy that has become a popular Christmas gift. He did it when he was working on a ship, dropped something, and had a little trouble finding it, and it led to an invention that he and his wife came up with, which was given a name. What name was it? And it's been around for a long time. That is our trivia question. Now, I got a minute here, and I want to take it. One of the big events of the week was Carrier Air Conditioning saying, well, maybe we won't go to Mexico. Well, that obviously did not come cheaply. And a lot of people, notably yesterday, Sarah Palin, are arguing against it. People on both sides are for it. People on both sides are against it. So I have a personal opinion about that, but I don't care right now. I'm not going to give that. This thing, it takes only a minute to get through it. This is my opinion and nothing else, and it's called carrots and sticks. Incentive is a very versatile word. It's both positive and negative. Both ways, it helps get things done. In recent days, we witnessed how the two sides can coexist. That's the carrot and stick theory. I refer, of course, to the Carrier Air Condition Company, which recently chose to not, after all, go to their place in Monterrey, Mexico. Rather, they're going to keep it in Indianapolis. What happened? Well, they offered Carrier both carrots and sticks. The sticks were the threats to impose punitive taxes on imported goods that were made in Mexico, and possibly loss of about 10% of Carrier's business in government contracts. Alone, the sticks are pretty sharp incentives, but they're not really very satisfactory. So they added carrots. in the form of tax breaks, particularly from the state. Now, the governor of the state is also known as the vice president-elect, and he has a colleague in this who is known as the president-elect. They got together and offered Carrier a something to the tune of $7 million incentive. So there's the carrot. It worked. It worked like a miracle, but it somehow can't make everybody happy. Well, I don't really much care because there are about 1,100 people in Indianapolis who are going to have a great Christmas. Is this a glimpse of the art of the deal? You know, Trump wrote the book, quite literally, on that subject. What is a good deal? Over the years, I have come up with my definition of a good deal, and it works two ways. A good business deal is when everybody walks out happy, and a good political deal is when nobody walks out happy. This deal seems to have qualified 100%. So, where will it lead? What will happen? There's disagreements even in my own household about this, but I'm tired of the my way or the highway theory of life. So, the question, can the coming administration usher in a new era of understanding and compromise? Stay tuned. It's only the beginning, but I'm smiling. After the break, Cheryl, we run just a little bit late. We'll get you and we'll start with the trivia. I remind everybody it is a new month, so everyone is eligible to win the trivia prize again because we have a once per month limit. We have to take a little break. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Marshall Gallup.
And without any further delay, good morning, Cheryl.
Hey there.
How are you today?
Wonderful.
Good.
I'm going to guess navigational compass.
Interesting guess, but not correct.
Ah, darn it.
Keep trying.
Okay, I'll come every Saturday trying, okay.
Oh, I know, and we love knowing you're out there. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Quick reminder for everybody, the trivia question is our first of the Christmas trivias for the season. What toy, popular Christmas toy, did Richard James invent? He was a naval engineer when he dropped something and had a little bit of trouble finding it.
I do see where Cheryl was going with that, though.
I do, too. I like it. And actually, a compass is a gimbaled machine. Gimbaling, for those of you who have been on boats or haven't, I guess, everybody knows that it's the method of sustaining them at 4 points and balancing, so they're always level. And that's what he was working on. So we can take that wherever it's going. This segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Things are slowing down a little bit, but they're still growing, and it's project time. It's project time around my house. 662-9794 for Troy. One quick PSA, the Bark for Life, I'm going to remind you of this, up to the day, January 21st. It is a charitable dog get-together for people who love dogs and would like to support the American Cancer Society. Those two things touch pretty much everybody. I've got a website. It is relayforlife.org/BarkSouthside. FL for Florida. That's going to be held on January 21st on Salisbury Road, not too far from where we sit. Marshall, what the heck is a reverse mortgage?
First, as it says in the name, it's a mortgage. It has to be
cleverly disguised.
Right. It has to be on your homestead. You have to live in it. The payment of principal, interest, and FHA insurance is flexible. You can choose to pay it, and if you do, your mortgage balance stays the same. If you choose not to pay it, your mortgage balance grows by that amount. So now you have a situation where your loan is growing over time.
Which logically would be called reverse, because when you make payments on a regular, it goes down.
Exactly. That goes back to the National Council on Aging manual, using your home to stay in your home. That's the basic treatise of the reverse mortgage. The third piece is there is no personal liability. As Camille was asking about in that initial question, if the borrower stays in the house for a good period of time, the balance on the loan gets more than what they could sell the house for. Because there's no personal liability, they can deed the house to FHA. That is not a foreclosure. That is not a deed in lieu because they did not have any personal liability. And they nor their heirs have any further obligation. But Camille's specific question was, what if the house appreciates? Certainly, you get the benefit of that appreciation. You get the benefit of any net equity. So what FHA is doing is they are providing a financial firewall to protect that scenario. More importantly, the person's budget has changed. If all they did was refinance an existing mortgage balance, their budget has changed by what they were paying principal and interest before. If they did it in a manner where they wanted to get extra cash because they had lots of equity in their home, then that additional amount of after-tax income, because there's no taxes on this loan proceeds, that helps the budget. And that gets into the last part, where then as you take that in, that has helped your budget for the long term, and you don't have to worry about it.
Oldest expression on this program is, if it sounds too good to be true, complete the sentence. Now, to me, you just described a win-win situation. So the logical conclusion is, why?
You have equity in your home. I like using this example. I once experienced someone who used a coffee can for their savings account, literally taking a coffee can, which many people don't realize there is such an animal as a can that held coffee.
I'm that old.
She literally stuck thousands of dollars in the coffee can, went out in the backyard and buried it. Now, there is no return on that investment. There's no appreciation of that investment.
Non-working capital in our parlance, right?
It's just there. When someone owns their home free and clear, they're not getting any return on that asset. They're hoping for appreciation. They're using it as their residence. This is just a compliment to say, yes, you can use the equity in your home in advance and still get all the benefits of owning your home.
You are getting imputed rent if you're living there with no payment.
Good point.
And imputed rent is one of those things that people like Bill Clinton always tried to tax but never got anywhere. But understandably, from a net worth position, from a lifestyle position, from a cash flow position, all those things are really not doing you much good if you're just sitting on that home.
Right. And as a book I just shared with a number of my financial planners, a gentleman by the name of Wade Fowle, creating what we call a home equity line of credit for that person that has substantial equity in their homes is an available amount of money to draw. And that available amount grows in how much is there. It's truly a rainy day fund. So if you don't need those dollars today, but you have that line of credit in place, it's growing and guaranteeing the equity in your home longer and longer and longer.
Unlike a traditional HELOC, home equity line of credit, if you let that sit and your house is appreciating, you are gaining a possible credit. But if you let that sit and your house goes down, there's nobody guaranteeing that HELOC's going to be there for you if you haven't drawn on it.
Always remember, there's one and only one difference between a charge card and a home equity line of credit from the bank. The home equity credit line from the bank is immediately secured as a mortgage against your property. The charge card that goes unpaid eventually becomes a judgment and becomes secured against your property when you can't pay it. That is one of the reasons why FHA rewards you for being a tightwad. That's the best way I can say it. Okay. That rainy day fund, if you leave it alone until you really need it it's going to be bigger. And if you get to that point down the road where you need to transition to another home, before you leave, you can take all that line of credit proceeds, put it in the bank, use it in your transition to the next location, then put your house up for sale, try to get the remaining equity out of it. And you've been rewarded for being a tightwad with that money.
Again, it just sounds too good to be true, doesn't it?
For the right person, absolutely.
All right, after the break, we got a little while till the break, but one of the things that the industry came up with a very short number of years ago, long after I got into this business, is something called the reverse mortgage to purchase, where you don't own the home yet, but you want to buy it. And this creates a situation where you can buy it spending a lot less money, no payments for life. And Marshall's going to tell you all about that after the break. But I also want Adam to chime in. I cannot, in my wildest dreams, figure out how a good financial planner with any kind of broad knowledge could look at this and not consider it one of the greatest possibilities for a real, true, comprehensive plan to allow their clients to live better over time. And yet, Adam goes to meetings all the time and talks to financial planners. Is there an age thing? Is it mostly the young people?
It's across the board. It's just people that haven't read up on the new rules. I think they're still carrying over the old reverse mortgage, but it's been greatly altered. So
if anybody out there is using a planner and they bring up the term reverse mortgage to that planner and the planner says, ugh, or you can lose your house or something like that, I want you to pick up the phone and dial 904-685-1505. That's our office, and we'll set you straight. And we have done that with people. Okay, after the break, I want Marshall to talk a bit about the getting into a home, the reverse mortgage to purchase, and a few other little things. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Adam Van Wee.
Marshall Gallup.
And as always, callers first. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Steve. It's Captain Dave.
How are you? It's been a long time. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, too. I'm back in the States for a couple of weeks, and then I'm heading back down to Jamaica a week from today.
Just got to rub it in, don't you?
Yeah, I got to, of course. You know, well, I'm there half the year now. Anyway, I'm going to say made the mistake, I guess it's about a month ago. I went online to do a little research on reverse mortgages, and I got inundated with phone calls, packages, and stuff. One thing I noted about it, it seemed as if the origination and closing fees were a little bit on the high side.
I'm going to let Marshall address that. If you've got an expert, you might as well use him.
Yep.
Captain, let me share with you what actually are required. In the state of Florida, there's a certain cost for getting a mortgage loan from a regulatory standpoint. We've got to have an appraisal. Right. We've got to run a credit report. We've got to have note stamps and tangible tax. Those are cost of getting a mortgage. Okay, so let's set those aside.
Right.
Then there is FHA mortgage insurance. Now, for many of us, our first home we bought was financed with an FHA loan. FHA is a mortgage insurance fund to take that risk. At the most expensive end, using the most money, that's 2.5% of the value of your home.
Right, that's PMI, actually, right?
No, it's FHA mortgage insurance. PMI is a private company, okay? But there's
a similar amount.
However, when you use the low-cost option and you don't take all the money that's available to you until after a year, that is only 0.5%.
Right.
So, again, this is part of managing.
I think they added about 6 points for origination.
Origination fee in the traditional mortgage business and the reverse is the same scenario today.
Yeah.
I can go up the interest rate spectrum and lower the origination fee for you,
right,
or go down the interest rate spectrum and increase the origination fee, or what we call discount points, because we're buying your rate down.
Pay me now, pay me later.
Right.
Only on these you don't pay at all.
Yeah, and let me ask you a question. Are these fixed instruments or are these variables?
Both. I would say there are the examples where the fixed is the best choice. Those are much fewer than those that are the adjustable. The loan that you take out a portion at the time, the loan you create a line of credit, the loan you want any flexibility with has to be an adjustable. And yes, that rate does go up. And yes, that rate does have limits on it.
So, in a what-if situation, what's the ramifications of, which I think is almost impossible to avoid eventually, is real serious inflation?
Okay.
Because of the printing of the money we've been doing for the last 20 years.
Okay,
Can the thing go to a 20% mortgage? Or is there a cap on it, or what?
Each different product's a little different, but just to give you an idea, most run with like a 5% cap from what's initially. But when you use it as a financial planning tool, and there's a component that you've borrowed the money, and there's a component that's available line of credit, the growth rate on the available line of credit goes up just like the interest rate on what you've borrowed. So there is a hedge, I think is the best term I could use.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to think your way through, what are you trying to accomplish? And ultimately, that interest rate risk, who do you think is actually taking that ultimate risk?
Well, I think it's probably the mortgagee.
Well, no, it's FHA.
FHA.
Okay, so the FHA insurance that is paid is setting aside a fund to be able to pay the claim when you owe more than the property is worth. That is why FHA has a sound insurance fund, is they collect the money to do that. That's why they report every year to Congress what is the actuarial status of their fund. This is very different from Freddie and Fannie because they had no insurance fund at Freddie and Fannie.
They were whole cloth.
they had the ultimate one, the printing press.
Yeah.
Only they weren't supposed to use it.
It's a real interesting subject. I mean, I have been looking at it as exactly what you're saying, as a tool. I don't need it now. I don't know when I would need it, but it's something to look at because, you know, I got a bunch of equity sitting here on this canal.
Well, let me tell you the one thing you started off with, and this is very important for everybody to know. If you go to a website called reversemortgage.org, that is the industry's website. You can get so much information. You can get a calculator, and nobody has your information. Now, on there, they list out all the certified reverse mortgage professionals, so you can choose to find someone. What you did in going to some of these pop-up ads, those are lead salespeople. So your name and information was sold to 10 people, and wait a minute, $200 a pop the lead company got for selling your name and information.
They sure does.
And the call centers go wild.
Wasted their time.
Yes.
I told the guy, I said, look, I was just, you know, I had one guy who was just, well, I'll send you a package anyway. And then a couple of days later, I get this whole big, you know, package of GFE. It looked like a GFE.
It's a loan application.
Good face. Yeah, it looked like a 1090, you know, a regular 1090, whatever it is.
1009. Yeah.
1009, yeah. So it sort of looked like it. I thought, all I did was ask a question.
Yeah. Well, the industry has done a great job in setting up an educational website, and I have actually that at the bottom of my email.
Did you say that was
reversemortgage.org?
Okay.
I was on it this morning, and I printed out a list of questions. Really good.
Steve, if I don't talk to you, have a great holiday. You too, Marshall, and you too, Adam.
Thank you.
Give us a call when you get back.
All right. Talk to you later.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
You know, that you asked a good question there about
that question.
Value with the mortgages going up. That's something I hadn't thought of, but how high will this rate get? Well, it could be capped, could not. So that goes back to what you said about who's bearing the risk. If the value of that mortgage rises well above the value of the house, which it might not because inflation will help the house too, supposedly, but you bear no risk in that. And that's pretty cool.
Well, it depends how you're using the reverse. Yeah. But yeah, exactly. If you plan on staying in your house until you pass away and you don't want to pass it on to your kids, you really aren't bearing that risk.
Okay, so now let's say you're downsizing, you're moving to Florida, whatever you're doing, and you got a bunch of money, and you're going to buy a home, don't want to rent, want to buy, but you want to pay half of it and never make a payment again. So we buy whatever home for half its value. How?
Okay, so let's say you sold your home in New York State for $300,000 proceeds. That's your net money you walked away with. You're coming down here and you were thinking you might want to buy a house and have no payment. So you restricted yourself to a house less than $300,000. Absolutely, you can do that. You pay cash for a house. That's what you can do. However, you could use about half of that or $150,000 to buy that next $300,000 house, leaving the remaining $150,000 in your retirement fund, in your reserves. And you have no principal and interest payment required for as long as one of you lives in the house.
Third option, you bring $300,000 down here and you fall in love with a neighborhood that's $450,000. You can do that.
You can do that, or you can do what I just had a gentleman do. He basically was paying cash for the house. He created an available line of credit in the maximum amount, so he only owed $125 on the balance on his mortgage after closing.
$125. Not a lot of zeros in that number.
Not a lot of zeros on that. But what he did was he was concerned, I put all this cash in this house. What happens if I need some money? He created the growing line of credit. That's his great shock absorber if and when he needs it. If he doesn't use it, it's growing as a rainy day fund.
Cool. Well, a long time ago, this very nice engineer apparently dropped a coil spring that he was working on a ship, and he noticed that it kind of bounced and bounced away from him, and it took him a little while to get it. So at that point, Richard James went home and talked to his wife and said, I've got this idea, and they bought a spring coiling machine, and they put a few slinkies together. And they took those slinkies to Gimbel's. They had an original 400 of them. They sold out in 90 minutes, so he started the company, and they've been doing it ever since, although they're both dead. But it's a quarter of a billion a year. See you next week, Van Wee Financial Hour.